I doubt they will. You know, I don't, you know, I mean, I have a lot of respect for Hakeem Jeffries. I'm not criticizing him, but how could he know?
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we catch up once again with Joan Walsh, national affairs correspondent for The Nation and an author, about the latest in the Democratic Party. Although voters in New York elected Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul to a full term in the midterm elections, the party's poor performance in races for Congress is drawing renewed scrutiny now that we know Republicans will hold a narrow majority in the House next year. Much of the blame for GOP gains in the Hudson Valley and Central New York races is falling on the state party and ousted Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney of the 17th District. Joining me now for analysis is Joan Walsh, an author and national affairs correspondent for The Nation. Nice to talk again.
Great to be back with you, Ian.
So we're speaking here now in late November. What was your top line reaction to the midterm results?
Like a lot of Democrats, I was relieved. It all went better than, you know, the mainstream media at least told us it was going to. You know, we won't really know everything about the Senate until we see whether Senator Warnock is able to defeat his rather pathetic opponent in Georgia. But even keeping the House losses to just a handful, which I still don't think we know exactly the outcome because of late vote counting, et cetera, is going to be a victory of sorts. And yet, when you looked at what happened in New York, you saw that it was not a victory. And if New York had done better, the Democrats probably would have held the House.
What is the lesson for Democrats in New York? Because, to be fair, they did try an aggressive gerrymander of the House maps that would have resulted in, you know, an overwhelming advantage for Democratic candidates. That was thrown out. The maps were what they were. What lesson should they take from this midterm?
Well, I think that aggressive gerrymander, I mean, I don't know. It's easy. It's really easy to second guess, but it was way too aggressive. And if somebody had been a little, if there had been like cooler heads in the room to say, no, don't make Jerry Nadler's district look like that. Just to pull out one really misshapen example. There might have been a different outcome. They also could have challenged it in the courts. You know, I think they were aggressive when it was wrong to be so aggressive and not that aggressive when maybe they should have been aggressive. But at any rate, there was also just a lot of political malpractice in terms of just very lackluster campaigns. You know, I hate to put it all on Sean Patrick Maloney. Obviously, he probably deserves credit for some of the House seats the Democrats saved, but the way he treated his own election was really ridiculous. He chased Mondaire Jones out of, you know, what was again both of their districts, but it could have been one that Jones ran alone in. He might have lost. We don't know. But it just all looked so bad. And especially for the younger people getting involved, getting motivated by politics in the last 4 to 6 years, it looked dirty.
Maloney and others of his ilk in the Democratic Party also warned about, you know, the left progressive flank of the Democratic Party being out of touch with what voters were focused on in this election, things like crime and inflation. Do you give that argument any credence?
Well, I give that argument some credence and also believe that some, you know, so-called Democrats played into that. You know, my mayor, Eric Adams, helped create the playbook that Lee Zeldin ran on and that a lot of Republicans ran on in terms of New York City being just a total hellhole of crime and, you know, and dirt and disorder. It's none of those things, although, you know, it's not great. It's not the best. It's not even what it was 3 years ago. I will admit that. But there was an exaggeration of the problems that led to Republicans being able to make that case in a much more effective way, because they could quote Eric Adams. And there was also, you know, a lot of pointing to things that actually did not cause the crisis, like bail reform, which I'm sorry, there's absolutely, I admit there are some studies that show maybe it has let some people out that shouldn't have been, but there are also studies that say that's not what happened. I mean, the studies are totally inconclusive, and yet people like Adams ran on the notion that bail reform is, you know, killing New Yorkers, and Lee Zeldin completely loved that, and he ran with it.
What kind of effect do you think President Biden had on these midterms? Are you someone who wants to see him remain the head of the Democratic Party and run for another term?
I am someone who wants to see him decide what he's going to do, and then I will answer your question, because I don't think there is an easy, you know, post-Biden answer. You know, he was not my choice. He was probably about my fifth choice in 2020. But I think he's been a great president. And, you know, he turned 80 on Sunday. I see that. I accept that. But if he's running against Donald Trump, he will definitely have all the brains and the smarts and the memory in, you know, he will be the better candidate. He will be the candidate who's more prepared. If it's not Trump, I don't know. We can see. But let's not kid ourselves. There will be a very bruising battle for the Democratic nomination if Biden does not run. So I'm not really looking forward to that, but I am looking forward to, you know, the holidays and not thinking about this stuff for a few weeks. And so let's talk again in, say, January.
Are you really able to unplug, you of all people?
No, absolutely not. But I am able to use that as an excuse to not think about that particular question, because there is nothing in it for us right now. I just think, you know, I do think I am able to put off, postpone, ignore things, questions, problems that might never surface. And either he will run again and no one will challenge him, Ian. No one. I don't think any Democrat would challenge him. Or he will not run again. And then it'll be really exciting. But right now, I don't have to think about that.
A couple more things. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced she will not seek a position in Democratic leadership in the next Congress. So she's passing the torch to a new generation. How do you sum up her career?
The most consequential speaker of all time, as Joe Biden did. And I kind of love that. I'm a feminist, so I do want to talk about her legacy as a feminist. But I kind of loved that he didn't put an asterisk on it, like most consequential female speaker, female. Well, there hasn't been one. So, you know, female politician, female Democrat. No, most consequential speaker. And I think that's true. When you look at all the things that she presided over, I mean, first and foremost, the Affordable Care Act. But I also want to go back to the various things, including climate bills that she passed under Obama, that even the great late Harry Reid couldn't get through that Senate. She passed an amazing roster of progressive change bills, and she deserves all the credit and then some.
How do you feel about this generational leadership change among Democrats, especially in the House, where, you know, Clyburn and Steny Hoyer, Pelosi are all, you know, they're even older than President Biden?
Yeah, they are. And I feel really good about it. I am younger than they are, but older than Hakeem Jeffries. But I just want to say I am so ready for this change, which is not to say anything bad about Pelosi. If she had stayed on, I would probably be on the phone now telling you, Ian, well, I think it's a good thing because blah, blah, blah. I admire her so much. She was my congresswoman for 25 years. But I also admire the fact that she told us 4 years ago, I will stay for two terms. That's it. And she made good on that promise. And I really, it's a really simple, simplistic thing. I really like politicians keeping their promises. And on this, you know, they are in the minority, not by much. They have a good chance of getting it back in 2 years. But I think it's time to sort out their differences, their similarities, whatever the shape of the new party is going to be. It just could not maintain with that fragile triad at the top. It just was not going to be sustainable. And so I'm looking forward to what may be uncomfortable changes, what may be controversy, but also change is good. Change is change. Change is what, you know, what we're all promised.
I mean, the question is, can somebody else keep all the different tribes together the way she had? I mean, her talent, I think even her critics would say, was counting and whipping votes, and she was able to get them over the line when she needed to. It's not clear if her successors will have that same ability.
I doubt they will. You know, I don't, you know, I mean, I have a lot of respect for Hakeem Jeffries. I'm not criticizing him, but how could he know what she knows about every one of her members? And, you know, I mean, the way that she could calculate what was likely to motivate somebody, and I'm not talking about, you know, venal motivations, although maybe sometimes it was that, but the way that she knew her members, somebody can't know that coming into that role. But that's okay, because it has to be. You know, we could not, like, just embalm her and keep her up there for the next 50 years, right? I mean, I'm not saying she's going anywhere anytime soon, but, you know, it had to be. I just felt like it had to be, even though I will miss her. I think she's great, but you have to have another generation learn how to lead. And I don't know what it's going to look like, and you don't either, but it'll be interesting.
And lastly, how do you feel about Governor Hochul as she heads into what's now a full term?
I am a Kathy Hochul admirer. I did a profile of her earlier this year. I believe she has strong progressive values. I talked to her about her family growing up in Buffalo in the 60s and 70s. But she did not run a great campaign. So I hope she learned from that. I think she's probably a better governor than she is a campaigner. But party leader requires both. So I hope she is convening a lot of sessions looking at what went wrong, what didn't happen. And I'm hoping she gets rid of Jake Jacobs, because I think that the Democratic Party needs a new chair. And I hope she knows that, too.
We've been speaking with Joan Walsh from The Nation, where she's a national affairs correspondent. Joan, always a pleasure to catch up with you. Thank you for taking all this time for us.
Of course. Talk to you again.
All right. That does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.